Hello and welcome to my podcast, Pathfinder, Growth Stories for Personal Success, with a new episode that will help you learn and grow in your chosen path to achieve massive success. I'm your host, Anil Mishra. Do you aim for creating a successful career and also become a sought-after speaker and an author? How to enhance your skills and become an influencer? We will hear more on this from our guest today. Our guest for today's episode is Yagneshwaran Ganesh, often called as Yag. He is among the top 100 global MarTech influencers and is responsible for marketing, growth, and product adoption at Pramati Technologies. He is also a TEDx speaker, a member of Forbes Council, and an author of 6 books, with the latest one titled The Growth Hacking Book. He has been a speaker across business forums such as CII, Young Indians, Chamber of Commerce, Netherlands, Kerala Startup Mission, and academic institutions such as IIT, Saxion, University of Applied Sciences, and more. Yag's recent books include The Growth Hacking Book, which is released in July 2019, Syncfluence, released in August 2017, Is Your Marketing in Sync or Syncing? Released in January 2016. He's an active member of the startup ecosystem and is part of Google for Entrepreneurs Initiative Startup Weekend, thus being a sounding board for startups in APAC and Europe. Yag also writes columns for Huffington Post, Forbes, MarTech Series, MarTech Advisor, DT Next, Tech Story, Management Next, and has been a regular blogger on ronsella.com, the thought leader on marketing practices. It is a privilege to have Yag in my show, and we will discuss about his journey, career approach, his books, speaking experiences. So I'm really excited to, you know, get started now. So hello, Yag. Welcome to my show, and I'm excited to have you here.
Hi, Anil. It's such a pleasure to be with you here, and thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. I am damn sure we will have some real great conversations today. I'm sure our audience can learn a lot and be inspired. So let's get started. Why don't you share, the beginning of your journey from the early days, starting from education, Yag?
Sure. So I was born in 85 and, started my education career. My schooling was in Mumbai. So I lived in Mumbai for about 14 years of my life. So that's where my little bit of Hindi comes from. And I can also speak a little bit of Marathi that way. And then I moved to Chennai because of my dad's transfer. And then I did my college in SRM in Chennai, and then did my MBA from Janssen School of Business in Coimbatore. And then, went on to pursue my first job. But the interesting thing here is that when I went to my college, I realized that after 3 years of my BSc Computer Science, I realized, hey, probably I'm not going to be a programmer any day in my life. Because, I understood that any program out of those, 20 or 10 programs that I got, for me, anything else was out of portion. That means I couldn't think on my own to code. So I was like, no, this is not happening. Probably I will not establish a great career here. And then I was actually fascinated by management a little bit. By then, I did not figure out that marketing would be my line of thought. But then I was like, hey, management seems relatively easier, or at least something that I can relate to. And day in and day out, we are working with people. So somewhere or the other, some management skills has to be there. And then I went in, I spent my first year figuring out what I wanted to do. And then only during my summer internship, I figured out that marketing is where I wanted to be. And that's where the marketing career started.
Wow, that's amazing. I think good news is, I think you figured out very early itself that you didn't want to do coding. Otherwise, you would have spent, many years and then thought, why I am in this field. That's great.
No, the funny part is that it's always easier to eliminate, what's something that you don't want to do. Finding what to do is not that easy.
Right. No, I think that's a good learning for, my audience as well, right? So
sure.
You got to eliminate
what not to do, and then move in that direction, and definitely you'll find out, you know, what you'll be good at, and you'll love spending time. So that's great. So you have been a startup founder as well, and, you know, director of marketing at Find, and you have also spent at organizations like Freshworks and now Pramati. So why don't you share some story behind this transition from being a student to an entrepreneur to being part of an enterprise?
Well, it's been a very funny and fascinating story. It's been a story of trial and errors. So the thing was, when I wanted to start my career, I was, you know, like any other guy, I was looking to get placed. And what happened is I got placed in a Dubai-based company. It happened sometime in May, and I had my exams towards the end of May and June. And by the time my exams was getting over, I got a call from that company, and they said it's a huge recession across the world, and especially in Dubai and all of that. It was probably sometime around 2008-09, and they called off the job, and I did not know what to do. And since you have already had an offer, you couldn't sit through any other placement. So that option was gone. And by now, the exams were gone and everything was gone. So I came back to Chennai, and then I did not know what to do. And then I thought, OK, let me go about doing smaller assignments, because I first tried applying for different companies, but then I did not really find what was the best option to start with. And then I started as a freelancer. So I thought, okay, let me go and work with some companies and try what they're looking for. And, you know, for any company without a commitment, they also found it easy to start with. But that's the phase where I had one of my biggest learnings. I worked on assignments with three or four different companies based out of the US, Canada, in Malaysia, and also in Belgium. So, and then what happened was, I was thinking someday I want to become the CMO of a company. That's where, you know, that was a typical mindset that I had back then. But in about 1 or 2 years, I found out that I did not want to, you know, grow an organization. I wanted to start up on my own. And then I started up my own company. I started a company called Crescimark, which meant creative and scientific marketing. I had a joint venture with a company in Luxembourg. And then I had that partner who was looking into the European market, and I was looking into the APAC and the US market. So it was typically funny. It was more like I tried setting appointments, developing business for companies here, getting them leads and getting paid over that. But over a period of time, I realized that, business could not be handled as one single person alone. Scaling was kind of really difficult. And over a period of time, I was not able to manage my capital cost and operating expenses together. So that's where I thought, okay. And that was the time I was also about to get married. So like any guy, I wanted a steady income, right? So yep. That's when I moved back to working. And interestingly, I am someone who loves being part of startups, and that's when Find kind of came into being. Find was where I wanted to develop my own product, and the guys at Find were developing a MarTech product that was based on AI. They were the product was typically into predictive lead scoring and AI for B2B marketing and sales, where they were predicting the intent data and fit data and matching prospects to companies. That kind of was a very interesting project, and I definitely wanted to be on it. And that's where that's when I joined them, and I was with them for about a year and a half. And by the time the company was kind of scaling up, the operations in Chennai was very different. And I was the only guy working from Chennai, and everybody else was in the US. So eventually about 1.5 years or close to 2 years, then I got kind of bored sitting in the same room without anybody else to look at. So I thought, okay, let me go ahead and join this company called Freshworks. And that's where I learned a lot of different things. With Freshworks, the difference was, as a marketer at Find, I was the only marketing guy. Even though I was a director of marketing, I was the only marketing guy. I was doing anything from designing to websites to campaigns to content all by myself. And when I went into Freshworks, I realized that, you know, how to do things on scale. And the way those guys were operating and the way the company had grown in the span of 8 years, it was a whole different ballgame. So that was, you know, a significant learning. But somewhere, you know, my roots of working in startups and wanting to work on a broad set of areas, that's where I decided, you know, I would like to go back to the startup route. And though Pramathi is a huge organization, the way Pramathi works is that each of Pramathi's products work as its own startups. So think of it as Pramathi being one large parent brand and each of the products working as startups that is being incubated. So that's the model. And right now I'm working on a product called Chatlets, so which is one of Pramathi's products, which is yet to launch. So I'm in the startup phase and right now I'm the only marketer there. And this team, we are under 10 people right now for this product. And I think this is the right space as a marketer, as a startup freak who loves to be in this. And that's where I am right now.
Wow. No, I think that's a very, very nice story. In fact, great story. You may be, you might have been referring that, you know, it's a pretty funny story, but I definitely feel it is story of a lot of, you know, grit and passion, because I've seen a lot of people, as you were saying, right, after completing your MBA, you were at that stage where you were not, like, you had a job, but then
that got called off. Yeah,
that got called off. And a lot of people are not able to handle that failure itself. And they really struggle to see, OK, what next, what I should be doing. So I think that's a great learning for a lot of the listeners who are in this category, that even if, you know, one door is closed, there are different other doors which can be opened. The key is to keep on trying and doing things. Like you mentioned, you started doing, you know, freelance projects, and, you know, it definitely led to, you know, opening newer and newer doors, and see where you have reached today. So I think there is great things to be, you know, taken forward from this story itself.
Also the reason I said it was funny, it's because, you know, when I had a joint venture with these companies, back then I did not even know that that was a joint venture. So, you know, that's when that was the best part of it. And learning entrepreneurship cannot happen in the books, right? So you have to get your hands dirty. You have to go down. You have to do mistakes. And that's the way you learn.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point which you have brought, Yag. So this is pretty interesting, you know, very, very interesting story. So moving on, I think you have also ventured into writing, you know, books, and that is definitely not heard of for many people, right? Especially in India, right? At a very early stage of their career, you know, people thinking about writing books. So, and you have published so far around 6 books. So why don't you share your experience on publishing these books? And talk about, you know, what these books cover and where can people get them.
Right. So again, very much like my career, my book also had a very seesaw swing from where I started to where I am. For instance, like the first time I just when I was reading books, I was reading mostly, you know, reading books in the self-help area, in the fiction area. And, you know, I was reading books that were in literature and all of that. But then I decided, why not give it a shot at writing? And until the first book was published, I never really thought that I could publish a book. I did not even believe that I would really publish this book. But then I just went on writing. So the first book I published was called Taken Already. So it's a romantic thriller that is, you know, it's a set of people in a typical IT park, and also having the setup of one person going through multiple personality disorder and all of that, and how that pans out, and a typical suspense thriller kind of a stuff. And the funny aspect was I was working as a marketer, and I was speaking at events and all of that. And and my experiments as a entrepreneur, all of these things were in the marketing area. And suddenly I realized that I was writing fiction books. So one fine day I asked myself, am I in sync with what I'm doing or am I sinking? Mm-hmm. So that was a question to myself. And I thought, since everything is in marketing, why don't I start writing in marketing? Because if at all I'm going to be able to promote my books, or if I'm going to be at least able to sell a few copies of my books, it has to be in a domain where at least, 5 or 10 people who know me. So the biggies of Jeffrey Archer and all these, Sidney Sheldons were all quite established in the world of fiction. And I was not going to have enough time for me to, on the ground go and promote myself as a fiction author. So the easiest point of leverage for me to was to leverage my entrepreneurship, marketing and speaking background and then venture into or pivoting into writing marketing books. So that's where I thought the question that I had for myself could become the title of my first marketing book. And subsequently, the word sync kind of caught on. And the interesting aspect that happened along with the book, Is Your Marketing in Sync or Syncing, was, I was interviewing marketers and the CEOs and the practitioners from around the globe. And because my whole idea was that nobody wants to listen to one person's gyan. It's important to go ahead and figure out what each people are doing on the ground, very much like what you're doing with the podcast. You're reaching out to all the interesting people that and bring those to your people. Similarly, I wanted to do that. So I wanted to glean into the experiences of people and put that together as a book. And it so happened that I connected with somebody called Christian Fechter in Netherlands. This happened about 4 years ago. And what was supposed to be a 20-minute call that was agreed, it became a 2-hour call. And fast forward 6 months, I was there in his home in Netherlands and I was presenting this concept. He took me to the Chamber of Commerce and, all of a sudden this became big. And the word marketing sync kind of caught on and my second business kind of stemmed out of it. It was called Marketing Sync. So we were coaching companies and we were going in and around APAC and Netherlands and part of Germany and all of that and helping these startup founders to get their product market fit and launch their product and all of that. So it was more of a marketing agency kind of a setup. And the I say it's really a funny or interesting story. It's because, when you invest in a relationship without expecting something and just you do it because you enjoy doing that, and that interest and that involvement kind of can take you to several places. Thereon, next came the book Syncfluence. Syncfluence was again influencer marketing, but from a different angle. Most of the people think that influencer marketing is all about just hiring an influencer and asking them to make a few tweets or post on social media and so on. But influence can happen through many channels. Your design could be a great point of influence. Your pricing could be a great point of influence. Your packaging could do something. Neuromarketing could do something. So there are several aspects to it. So synchronizing the points of influence is what influence is all about. Mm-hmm. And the most recent one, the Growth Hacking book, it's a massive book where, we thought of bringing in about 35 authors from around the globe together. So I have written just one chapter in that book. So we have had 35 authors from about 9 countries and each of them talking about specific topics in marketing. And this kind of was stitched together into one massive project called the Growth Hacking Book. So where we believe that, most growth hackers only talk about either using a tool or they talk about the kind of skills. But we kind of came up with a mathematical formula to it. We said growth set is equal to tool set plus skill set plus mindset. And those are the 3 different sections. And we have about 7 or 8 chapters under each of these sections. That's how the book was built. And all of these books are available on Amazon.
Wonderful. I think I'm really looking forward to, picking most of these books and reading myself, because I'm sure, the kind of value and content which you have brought in those books will be massive. So thanks for sharing it out. So one question, right? So what is that recommendation or suggestion you would like to give to any professional who may be thinking of, you know, putting together some thoughts of his in a form of a book, but didn't know, you know, what, how he should go about or, you know, get started. So if you have any message for them, what would it be that be?
Sure. So, you know, today the barriers to publishing has kind of come down vastly. And there are a number of self-publishing companies. You first have to decide whether you want to go the self-publishing route or do you want to go the traditional publishing route. And then you have to decide what is that your book is going to be. And the fundamental expectation that you have to set yourself is that, you know, what is the goal of your book and how you're going to go about it? Because it's very easy to get carried away that the moment you complete your first book, you know, there are going to be tens of thousands of copies that are sold and people are going to come after you seeking autographs. None of these happened, right? So this won't happen. You have to clearly know why are you working on the book. For example, in my case, I use books more like a you know, business card. For example, you know, it kind of helps in certain places. Like say, if you're going to be a speaker at a conference, or if you're going to be you know, an adjunct professor at a business school, or even if you're going to be a consultant. So it kind of helps in certain areas. And say, for example, if you are a business coach, your books could be part of your coaching material. So you have to think how you're going to use the book, how you're going to leverage that. And that's how you're going to, you have to go after it. And publishing is the last thing, you know, you have to worry about. It's kind of very easy these days.
Right. No, I think that's very valuable. So moving on, you know, how did your journey as a speaker begin? You have spoken at multiple platforms like TEDx, CII, IIT, and also internationally in Germany, Netherlands, and more. So why don't you share some experiences of those, you know, gigs as well?
Sure. My very first ever speaking gig started in my college, that is 2 years after completing my MBA. One of my marketing professors invited me to the business school, and it was a very unique experience because, you know, going back to your own college and you suddenly, from being a student, you're being seen as a expert guest and all of that. So it was a whole different feeling, a lot of hospitality and all of that. I discovered that I could actually be comfortable going on stage and talking to people. And this comes from a person who was very shy to go on stage, you know, in my first year of MBA and those times. I still remember those days where I went prepared, and the moment I go on stage, I don't know what I'm going to speak. And there are things like you know you're going to speak, and then there are things that you felt you should have spoken. And then ultimately, there's a huge gap between these two. So what happened was, after that, I felt there are certain topics that I was very comfortable with. Like, I could talk on marketing because by then I had my freelance jobs. I had been an entrepreneur. So the little bit of entrepreneurship kind of takes the complete shame out of you. So you're kind of always feeling free to go on stage, and you want to take every bit of opportunity to present whatever you have. So that's how it started. And TEDx happened because I was when I was with Find, you know, that was a AI based company, and the theme of TEDx in Bangalore was also about AI. And there was a good match. The way TEDx works is the curators kind of pick the speakers and they reach out to them, and that's how the whole process starts. So that was interesting. And then CII, again, it so happened that CII Madurai, kind of those folks called me once because they saw me speaking in another event, and some of the curators were there. So most of the times it has always been that, you know, you speak somewhere and then somebody refers, and that's how the journey goes on. But it's more like I have never looked at speaking as a you know, revenue model or a money making this thing. It was more like, say, since I'm writing books, since I'm also working, it started purely as experience sharing more. Yep. It started with students, then it became speaking at conferences and so on. But it's more like just because I enjoy doing it, just for the fun of it.
Sure. No, I think that's great. You know, I think TEDx is a pretty unique platform, and you know, delivering messages and talks there is definitely a bit different than, you know, going ahead and speaking at any other, you know, conference or a platform itself.
Right, and especially when you're given a specific time limit as well.
Right. So I'm sure you might have prepared a lot and found, you know, some key things which you should be focusing on TEDx speech, right? So why don't you share some nuggets and thoughts on that aspect as well?
Sure. So the way it works with TEDx is they have several rounds of curation of, you know, whatever you're going to speak. So, you know, it was one of the most unique experiences, as you rightly called out, because most of the times I don't over-prepare to go on stage because I don't want to talk from memory. And at the same point, no, you look at the audience, you know, you kind of pick up cues and you start talking about things that is relevant to them. But TEDx kind of works very differently. They have a theme for the event, and they also, the curators also want to make sure that none of the speakers are repeating similar content. So they ask you to kind of give a write-up of what you're going to speak. And that once that happens, then the curation team kind of looks into the content. And if there are anything that you cannot quote, especially, you know, you cannot quote any brands or you cannot endorse anything, it has to be purely educative, and it has to be purely for the benefit of the audience than being promotional. So they make sure of that. And after 2-3 rounds of curation, then the content is kind of, when they ask you to shortlist key pieces of your content into, you know, 2 or 3 sentences here and there, so that it could be sent to the team that would work on your presentation slide and so on. And then there are at least 2-3 rounds of practices where, you know, you make sure that you're getting the timing right, you're finishing within 18 minutes at max. So anything between 5 minutes to 18 minutes is where the range is. Right. And it's very different, right? So once you've practiced about a good number of times, then it kind of becomes second nature to you, and you just go on with the content.
Wow. And I'm sure that experience might have helped you deliver, you know, greater impactful messages at your different speaking gigs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the format of, because, you know, it's very important to make sure that your audience is going to get some sort of takeaway. And one of the biggest learning for me, you know, the way I looked at TEDx was the person on stage, the intellect of the person on stage is always going to be way lesser than the intellect of the entire audience. So you have to make sure that their time there is being valued properly, and you give them something that they take away. So yeah, that's the most interesting perspective that I got from TEDx.
Right. So moving on, I think with your, you know, writing gigs and speaking gigs, you definitely have emerged as a MarTech influencer. Why don't you share your journey of becoming an influencer itself, and what were your key learnings, and what will you recommend people to do so that they can also become influencer in their respective area?
Right. First things first, I think the very word influencer is kind of overrated, because the reason I say this is that, you know, somebody who is going to be today an influencership, or somebody who is regarded as an influencer, is purely being measured on how they are on social media, or how much of an engagement they create for their content. And you know, an influencer is measured in so many ways. But one of the, if somebody wants to become an influencer, the first and foremost thing is that they should not try becoming an influencer. They should actually try to be the most knowledgeable person in a particular domain, or they need to become experts in those domains. So by virtue of their expertise, if they are able to bring in unique perspectives and all of that, eventually they'll create an audience, or they'll create a following around them, and they'll be able to share information with them. At the end of the day, a good influencer is someone who is not endorsing brands, but who is treating his or her own influence as currency, and who is being very cautious and very respectful of their audience's time, so that they deliver valuable information all the time. So it's a huge responsibility, you know. It's like, and for me, you know, I didn't work towards becoming an influencer. One fine day, I got an email and I got pinged from Analytica saying that I am recognized as among the top 100 influencers in MarTech. So it was more of a journey where I was just enjoying being part of the MarTech unit. In fact, MarTech was just up and coming those days, and I was super excited with AI. I was super excited with any tech related to marketing. And I was more of those experimental folks who love to get their hands on anything, everything that was new. And I was just curious. That's how I would put it.
Yeah. No, I think very well said. I think once you start enjoying doing your things, you will, you know, become an authority in that space. And all these, you know, tags, influencers, awards will follow you. I think you have put it very, very well. So moving on, do you have any mentors who have helped you, you know, shape your career or, you know, your path for success?
Not really. I've never had a mentor in the form of a person, but I used to read a lot of books, and that kind of helped me to an extent. But one of the biggest learnings that I've had is that, you know, beyond a point, material success does not matter. And I would say, you know, there are two forms of KPIs to look at yourself, right? So one is anything and everything that comes with an external locus. For example, you know, the kind of house that you buy, or the kind of successful business person, or say a professional that you become, your money, your house, your car, whatever. Right. So all of those things are external things which are always playing some sort of a multiplayer game where you're showing the other world that, hey, this is who I am and this is what I can do. But the most important aspect for anybody as in terms of real growth is how happy he or she can be. And that is purely you know, an internal single player game which only you can measure. You know, you can tell the world that you're happy, but only you know if you're truly happy. So I think you know, that because of several experiences of my life, I kind of came to this sort of a conclusion. And I would not say this is some sort of a mentorship or somebody that I look up to, but it's more that I make sure that I don't do anything that I don't particularly feel good about. In sense, like I make sure that I'm only building long-term relationships with long-term people. You know, I'm also making sure that I don't do anything that, how do I put, I don't do anything that does not make me not easy to sleep that night. So that's as simple as that.
Right. No, I think you have touched upon a very important point around books being a large influence to you. So what kind of books and, you know, other resources that have inspired you? Why don't you share a bit on that? And what are you reading right now?
Right. So my reading habit is somewhat very different from what most people would, I guess, because when I look at my Kindle right now, I could see there are at least 6 or 7 books that are open at, you know, at 28%, 32%, 60% or whatever. And I don't read books in a sequential manner. This is something that this is a trick that I picked up on the advice of, you know, Angelus CEO Naval Ravikant. In one of his podcasts, he shared that you have to make sure that you value your own time. So I just pick up, flick through books, and if a page captivates me, I read that. And when the moment after a few pages, if I get bored, I kind of close that book and move on to another book. So typically there are like always 6 or 7 books that are open. And the kind of books that I'm reading right now, you know, it ranges from business to spiritual spirituality to meditation to autobiographies of people to physics books like Richard Feynman and so on. So it's like a whole lot of things right now. So I would say when somebody is going to begin reading, you start reading with whatever you like. And as you spend more time reading, you will figure out what your taste is and it will evolve. And then, your taste towards reading will also change over a period of time. So you cannot have, one particular genre for your entire life.
Right. Well, that's really good advice, Yag. Moving on. So are there any low points of failure in your career that you would like to share? And how did you emerge from that situation? Any key learnings you acquired as part of that?
Sure. So this was, I would say, this goes back to my, 11th and 12th standard. I was never academically a great student, right? So especially when I was in my 12th standard, my parents or my classmates, my teachers, everybody in my school, nobody thought that I would pass the examination. I was in that kind of a stage, and back then I did not have a great relationship with my dad as well. So I was not at my home. Came out. I was staying with a friend about two streets away. I was doing all sorts of nonsense, and I was not at a great frame of my mind, and I was not welcome at the school. I was looked down upon, and I was very depressed myself, for whoever I was. I felt myself was cringeworthy. And at some point, and to an extent, I would say, their guess or their prediction was not too far, because I just scraped through, by 2 or 3% more than what would be considered as a pass mark in certain subjects. But having said that, then I realized that one of the reasons why I was what I was that I was doing everything and anything that made me very unhappy. Like, say, for example, I took certain courses in my certain electives during my 11th and 12th, which I felt I would never make use of in my entire life. Mm-hmm. I hated science, I hated math, and at least that gave me a great perspective that I was never going to do engineering, right? So that's when I decided, hey, this is not for me. But that's when I started, maybe I should find out what I really love, and I should do only that. And if I'm not excited about it, I shouldn't do that. And regardless of who says what, let it be anybody, let it be parents, let it be friends, let it be, the person whom you respect the most. But at the end of the day, what matters is you know what you want to do. If that doesn't work, everything is going to fall apart. And that's when my elimination of things started. And that's when I realized, okay, let me do this. Let me see if it's working. If it's not, let me throw that away and do something else. And that's how, from there to MBA to entrepreneurship, and from there leaving everything to again going back and joining companies and helping startups and all of that. So if you look at it, it's a series of elimination all through my life, and now that is kind of also reflected in the way I'm reading books as well, right? So right. Open something I don't like, I move on to something else.
Wonderful. I think that theory of your elimination is definitely has been helping you out move forward, because you are eliminating the things which you don't want to focus on. So I think that's pretty powerful, learning which you are sharing. So I'm sure my audience will be, receiving a lot of help from this advice. So finally, would you like to share any advice you have for my listeners, especially, the students who are looking forward to join the corporate world or early stage professionals on how they can plan their career growth and achieve success?
So first things first, what I would, there are two parts to this. One, I will always say, don't seek advice with too many people, because, advice is more like salt. If you receive it from too many people, it's going to make your food bad. And secondly, it's going to only confuse you. And the way you look at it is like, I have seen a lot of people who say I'm passionate about this, I'm passionate about that. But passion can be identified only when you have experimented on a few things and, you know, you taste a little bit of success in something. And then you probably feel that I'm passionate about this because, you know, passion is nothing but you are enjoying seeing the results of what you're doing. So try out different things and pretty much, you know, early in your career, don't look for, you know, high paying jobs. Or don't look only at the paycheck. Look at what you can learn and do all sorts of experiments and fail fast. Once this happens, then, you know, you are eventually going to figure out what you love to do and what makes you happy and what can make you successful. So the moment you realize what is that for you, it could be anything. Let's not be judgmental about it. It could be painting. It could be writing. It could be, you know, becoming a poet or it could be, you know, being a business person. It could be starting a company or it could be composing music. Just go with the flow. And when you invest enough amount of time in that, then I think that's the best thing that you can do. So be see if you can enjoy whatever you're doing. And if not, don't do that and move on to the next one.
Right. No, I think that's a pretty powerful statement and advice, you know, for the audience. And are you working on any pet projects right now, which is very close to your heart? Would you like to share something about it?
Pet project in a sense, like there are some smaller experiments, some smaller product MVPs that I'm working with a very close friend of mine. So I'm just still figuring out where, you know, the scope of the product and how it can be built and so on. Apart from that, I am mentoring some small startups, especially, you know, in and around Chennai. And I'm working with those founders very closely. And that's something that I really enjoy doing, you know, helping them initially to get their marketing up and running. And apart from that, I have been an adjunct marketing professor at a college in Trichy. So that's something that I do apart from my work. So, yeah, these are the three things that I'm doing apart from work. And I think the way I look at it is that spend your 20% of the time in doing things that you enjoy. I mean, again, which is not your bread and butter. And eventually that will become something big over a period of time. So invest in small amounts and let it compound over your lifetime.
Absolutely. I think quite a profound statement over here. So why don't you share with my audience on how they can reach you, see your work? And let's say, you know, there are any early stage startups who would like to, you know, seek some guidance from you. How can they reach out to you?
Sure. So I'm most active on LinkedIn. So it's Yagneshwaran Ganesh. That's my name. And it's a relatively SEO friendly, unique name. So people can easily find me on LinkedIn. And apart from that, people can always reach me on my email. That is my first name, which is yagneshwaran@gmail.com. So I'm more than happy to connect with anyone and everyone. And, you know, it's all about relationships, right? So feel free to reach out and let's see how we can synergize for anything that we have.
Wonderful. Thank you, Yag, once again for coming to my show and sharing some really exciting nuggets from your success story. And I'm sure this will help our audience to create a pathway for their success.
Thank you so much, Anil. And it was a pleasure to talk to you and your audience.
With that, we come to an end for today's awesome episode. And bye until we meet again with another exciting personal success story. I hope you enjoyed our today's episode as much as I did while having conversation with my guest and have taken some practical tips that you can implement today to start defining your pathway to success. Loved listening to this podcast? Don't forget to share this with your friends and colleagues to help achieve their potential and create new chapter of their success. I am sure they'll be thrilled with your suggestion. If you have any speaker recommendation that you would like to hear in our future episodes, kindly write to me at anil.m.consulting@gmail.com or drop me a note at my Twitter handle anilkm108 and Instagram handle coolanil108, and I will bring them to our show. You can also write me with your suggestions and feedback to improve this podcast. Bye for today, and I look forward to bringing another exciting episode soon. Till then, go and create your pathway for success.